Oh, this looks like some kind of a conspiracy.
Yeah, I like that. Good afternoon. I will convene the Senate Committee on Education. The first item on the agenda is House Bill 2550, and we are in work session, and Representative Centuri, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for your record, my name is Ron Centuri. I'm State Representative of District 22, and I would like to offer to the committee House Bill 2550, the A3 amendment. And I think that these accomplish all that we have talked about and all that we have tried to do. There will be some small change that the committee will be open to a small conceptual amendment on page 2. And I think
these are in the dash 3 amendments.
And what I'd like to do, Mr. Chair, if it would be okay, is to have legislative counsel and go over exactly as we have, the three of us have discussed it.
Cindy Hunt, Legislative Counsel's Office. Page 2 of the DAC 3 amendment in lines 22 to 25. Essentially what we're doing is we're making what's white space there now, paragraph C, and then we are taking out or actually reinstating the italicized bracketed language and taking out the boldface. So it would read, paragraph C, however, at least one half of the total full-time equivalent, parentheses, FTE, teaching and administrative staff at the public charter school shall be licensed by the commission pursuant to ORS 342-135, 342-138 or
342-140. Mr. Chair, that's the restoration of the language as it was at the outset. The bulk of the change then would be on page 4.
Excuse me just a second, but Gene, are you in agreement with what?
Yes, I am. I think there was just some confusion. Okay. It just restores the language that is in Senate Bill 100.
Okay, thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, just for brevity, I'll paraphrase what we are trying to accomplish with this, and that is that we think that it is essential to have everyone who works in charter school to be thoroughly checked, and the background checks are essential. And I would say that as in Senate Bill 100 originally, as we sent it back to you, required background checks, but we did not know at the time that TSCP has another level that they're able to investigate. And had we known that at the time, I believe the House would have probably sent that over as we are doing it here today and asked the Senate to agree to that. So I think this is excellent. So what we're doing is requiring TSCP to do the background checks on all applicants. And those that are not part of the 50% licensure will still have this background check. That then becomes the basis for registration, and these people will also be registered with TSCP.
Excuse me, Ron. So the registered teachers will have the same background check that a regularly licensed teacher, licensed teacher will have.
Correct.
Is it exactly the same?
Mr. Chair, Gene Thomas, Governor's Office, just for clarification, under licensing, TSCP would also check their work experience and their education have been listed. Under this, it will limit it to the LEBS check, FBI, and the Interstate Clearinghouse.
Correct.
Not exactly.
Then TSCP will not be able to deny persons teaching in a charter school except in that something shows up on the background report that's an adverse report. And we've also allowed then on page 5, section 3, that there will be a report to the 71st and 72nd Legislative Assembly on public charter school teacher registry. And each court will include a list of the persons who are registered with the commission as a public charter school teacher. And I think Gene has got some comments on that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and this is, I think, in talking with Cindy, we don't need to have any additional language, but just for clarification purposes of what we had discussed in the governor's office would be that the report would come in and it would list the persons who are registered, but would also give the information of what was the position or what was a relevant background so that we, the legislature could in future sessions take a look to see is there a need to do any changes to this.
Ron, is this list available ongoing to the public at the PSBC?
It would be, yes.
It would be. Mm-hmm. And so I like the idea of the governor asking for a report. And so, as I said, this is a pilot program. We can see who, in addition to a regular licensed teacher, is in our school.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I agree, and I think it's valid that we have that information available to the legislature, so we can make future decisions based on that, in any direction that we need to go. Final addition would be on page 5, starting line 28, and we're going to require that that the folks who are applying for this background check would also be responsible for paying for it, like others are, and it would be up to $50, but it would not exceed the administrative cost.
Okay. We'll hold our questions until we hear from Jean and then get back to us. Jean?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think we're pleased with this. I'd like to thank Senator Duncan for initiating some additional discussions after the hearing on Monday. And I obviously, this has been an issue that has tied us up for the last this was heard the first day of the first day of this session. We believe that with having a registration and having that information available will allow us to capture the information, allow the kind of flexibility that I think many have talked about, but it will also allow us to revisit the issue during the next session, and we believe it's a good compromise on both sides.
Thank you. Questions or comments from the members? Mm-hmm. Senator Duncan.
Chair, I have a question. I don't know if it's appropriate, but I know Gene knows whether Dave Mack is going to have to answer that question. The fee not to exceed $50, and I'm trying to remember, is that the registration fee, or does that include the FBI check? Because I know there is a fee to set up those.
I think Cindy knows that.
You know, okay, Cindy.
Senator Duncan, Mr. Chair, the fee language, according to that, it says that includes any fee charged pursuant to 342.223. 342.223 is the FBI and the reg check. So, and that costs in terms of the $42. So they have a little flexibility though.
So the 42, Mr. Chair,
would be included in the $50.
$42 for that, and then $8 for the administrative.
Or they could also set their fee at lower than $50.
Right, but I guess I was trying to be sure they would. Well, I don't think Mike is going to respond later. I'd be curious to hear from him, too, if he thinks that's going to cover their cost.
All right. Well, we're on that. David, are you here? Please come forward. You heard the Senator's question. Could you respond to that, please?
Thank you. I'm David Martin, Executive Director of PSBC. I just picked these amendments up when I walked in, so I haven't had an opportunity to analyze the fee structure. The fee structure is $50, so that would allow $8 for the initial registration. On the renewals of registration, I'm not sure what our costs would be. Certainly would...
renewals would not require an additional...
It would not require an attorney, no. So they may be lower than that, but for the initial registration, it would not be any lower than $50.
Not be any higher than $50.
You would not receive this, does not exceed.
No. This only allows $8 for the initial registration.
Okay, other questions for David?
Well, I guess my question is that a... does that do it?
$8 would cover our postage and handling, microfilming, and other...
And reporting to the legislative assembly.
Whatever staff time is involved in these registrations could not be covered within that amount of time.
Would not be covered.
No. That's about 15 minutes of time on the average for our staff.
Mr. Chair, if I could just offer on that, as we suggested, I think, on Monday... Obviously, this is speculative, but I'm assuming that we're going to have 10 to probably the most 15 schools. We're not talking about a huge number of teachers on this end of this. All of the 50% that are going to be required to be licensed to process through this, we're talking about a minimal number of people, and I think that when we get the reports back to the next legislative session, if this needs to be addressed, we can certainly make allowances for that.
Or the PSBC could go to the e-board if all of a sudden there was a big burden.
Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to ask Mr. Martin, what education standards are to be met to be a registered teacher, this new registry that's being created here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Castillo, I believe this calls for the district or the charter school provide information but doesn't create any standards against which that would be measured.
Thank you.
Senator Duncan, did you have additional questions?
No.
Okay. Any other questions for Gene or David? Okay, thank you very much. The chair moves House Bill 2550 as amended with the -3 amendment plus the conceptual on page 2 to the...
Go ahead and open a work session.
I did originally.
Oh, okay.
Just to make sure. Open a work session.
You've got to move the amendment to the bill.
And,
Okay, we'll do that. Absolutely. I move, the chair moves the -3 amendments to House Bill 2550, with the, including the conception rule on page 2. Is there discussion? Is there objection?
I object. I don't support the amendment.
Okay. The clerk will call the roll.
No.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator Duncan?
Yes.
Senator George?
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passed. Chair moves House Bill 2550 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator Duncan?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Gordon?
Aye.
Senator
Sherman? Aye. No.
Aye. Motion is passed. Okay. Very good. Yes, Senator.
Just as a vote explanation, I did vote to send to the floor. I still reserve the right to vote no on the floor.
Okay. And I want to thank you. Do you have something to say?
It's a sheriff that I might just say I would like to publicly thank the governor for staying with us on this and working through this. And I'd like to thank this committee for continuing, even though we thought we were at an impasse time or two, that we were able to work this through, and I really believe that as we've completed this, it will be a benefit to the entire state.
I do, too, and special thanks to you, because I know you moved out of your area of comfort some time ago, and really appreciate the work that you did with Gene and Cindy. Thank you for staying, and Gene, special thanks to you, and I will say now, it's been a pleasure working with you. But I would add to that, I never want to play poker with you.
Somebody else said that to her, too.
And let's see, I'd like to give the other primary stakeholders an opportunity to comment if you'd like, the OEA or the OSDA or COSA, if any of you would like, or any other member of the public, if you'd like to comment, please come forward. Okay, seeing none, we will close the work session on 2550. Okay. Let's see, what, 5 minutes? Okay. We'll be in recess for 5 minutes. And I know most of you have 3 o'clock meetings also, but we have reserved the room. We can come back here at 5 o'clock, but we have to be in full session at 5:45, and so what we will do, and we have a number of items on the agenda, and first I want to go through some motions to refer to rules or to table, and need to do that because the President has asked us to shut down our committee today, but he also said that if there's something that urgency if the majority of the committee wants why we can open it up at any time. And so the first item we'll take is I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 557. Senator Duncan.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move we table 557.
Senator Duncan moves that we table 557. Seven. Is there discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I support that motion. I have
to table
to
table it, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would object. I think that the issue is of enough significance to advance, but I realize that I may be.
Okay. Well, we'll vote on the motion to table. Then the clerk will call the roll on tabling 557.
Aye.
No.
Aye. Motion is passed. I'll open a closed work session 557 and open work session on House Bill 3585.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Duncan.
I move we table House Bill 3585.
House Bill 3585, it has been moved that we table that bill. Is there a discussion? Is there objection?
Objection. Yes.
Senator Courtney, objects. The clerk will call the roll on 3585.
Aye.
Motion is passed. House Bill 3585 has been tabled. I'll close that work session and open. I'll open a work session on House Bill 3013, and the chair moves that bill to the Senate Rules Committee. The reason I do that, members, is that that is a homeschool bill, that there's work still in progress. And this is a courtesy to Representative Starr to allow him to work with the Governor's Office and the Department of Education. Is there any objection to moving House Bill 3013 to the Senate Rules Committee? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay, I'll open the public hearing part of House Bill 2249. And I have a sign-up list here, and we'll start with David Messero David, bring up two other people that would like to speak to at the same time. I can't tell based on the sign-up sheet here who it is, but okay. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed. We're having a hearing on House Bill 2249.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is David Mesro. I'm one of the seven members of the State Scholarship Commission appointed by the governor, approved by the Senate. Joining me at the table are the current chairman of the Scholarship Commission, Diane Tsukumaki, and the current vice chairman of the commission, George Bell. We're here today to ask you to consider House Bill 2249, which refers to a name change for the Scholarship Commission. As I testified to you at an earlier session, brought about particularly by the acquisition of new responsibilities passed by the last legislative session that made us responsible for the Office of Degree Authorization. We think that bill should be moved forward without any additional amendments. Knowing that there's a considerable prospect for such an amendment to be introduced today, well, we'd ask you to consider a number of things about any proposed amendment.
Excuse me, David, are you familiar with the amendments that are being proposed?
I had an opportunity to receive those at noon today, so.
The NAS committee doesn't have them yet. I don't think you've heard about them, but I haven't. Okay.
They're very much like car advertisements sometimes, long before the product is available, so you have to rest on the advertisements.
That gives me a lot of confidence there.
Excuse me, interruption, David.
No problem at all.
We would like to get through. I've got a long list of people testing.
Yes.
So if you get to the point, appreciate it.
I think you should know that any amendments being brought forward were done without our knowledge and without consultation and certainly not with our agreement. I would ask you to consider asking 5 questions. Does any proposal that's brought forward provide for an impartial body to review the decisions by the Office of Degree Authorization that's comparable to the one offered by the Scholarship Commission? Does any proposed amendment further the desire to have the Scholarship Commission more broadly involved in the development of higher education policy? 3rd, is the proposal a result of a sustained effort at consultation and consensus developed by all the stakeholders in the ODA process? And with that, I would include the Oregon University System, the community colleges, as well as the commission and the private institutions. The 4th question I hope you'll ask, is there any documented, tangible, demonstrable failure of the current system that would encourage some shift of this responsibility? And the 5th question, does the proposed amendment give the Scholarship Commission some due recognition for the work that it has done over the last 2 years as this responsibility was assigned to us and carried out by us? I think you'll find any examination of those questions and any answers provided to that should be no, absolutely not. On every one of those questions, I will keep questioning anybody carefully, because I think they'll have to answer no to every one of those questions. Sound public policy is not developed in secret, and it's not developed through ambush tactics. I find myself shocked and dismayed by what has happened in this matter. The ultimate irony is that House Bill 2249, a bill offered by the Scholarship Commission to change its name to incorporate the responsibilities of ODA, is now being used to remove this office from the Scholarship Commission. It's unseemly, it strikes me, and it smacks of an effort to promote self-interest over public interest. I respectfully urge you to summarily reject any amendments to House Bill 2249. Thank you very much, Mr.
Would you like to make any comment? Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Diane Sukamaki. I'm a member of the State Scholarship Commission appointed by the governor and currently serve as chair of the commission. It's unfortunate that you haven't had a chance to review this. We were just recently provided a copy of this. As a lay member, someone who's been associated with education, the responsibility to oversee the Office of Degree Authorization was one that this lay commission took very seriously over the past 2 years. I would, as you look at this amendment, simply ask you to ask those questions that Commissioner Massaro has provided to you, and we look forward to your serious consideration.
Thank you, Diane. George Bell, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. George Bell, Vice Chair of the State Scholarship Commission. I have nothing to add to the remarks made by my colleagues, except to say that 6 of the 7 members of the commission are in agreement with the position that we oppose any amendments to the bill to change the name of the Scholarship Commission.
Fine. If you don't mind, we'll hold our questions and comments for until we do now have the amendments. And so I would like to call up Stephen Kafori, Darian Dean, and Ray or Roy Calvert, please. And tell us about the amendments that you would like to make to 149.
Thank you, Senator Hartung. I'm Barry Andini, Executive Director of the Oregon Independent Colleges Association. My remarks today are to support the -1 amendments that you now have in front of you for House Bill 2249. This amendment would move the Office of Degree Authorization from the Scholarship Commission to the Department of Education. To refresh your memory, the Office of Degree Authorization, I'll call it the ODA if you don't mind, is a small but important state office that performs primarily two functions. The first one is degree authorization. The ODA protects Oregon consumers from fraudulent and or poorly run degree granting institutions and from fraudulent use of degrees.
Excuse me, Gary, say it again, the Oregon Department of Education?
The Office of Degree Authorization.
Oh, not the ODA, the ODA?
ODA, maybe I better stick with the Office of Degree Authorization.
Okay.
Protects Oregon consumers from fraudulent and or poorly run degree granting institutions and from fraudulent use of degrees. All private sector and out-of-state, that is, private and public out-of-state colleges and universities desiring to grant degrees in Oregon must have permission from the Office of Degree Authorization and must subject themselves to routine, periodic review of their operations by that office. They must also tell everyone with whom they deal that that office is a place to lodge complaints against their institution. By statute, all of Oregon state universities and community colleges, this is important, are exempt from these degree authorization procedures. All public institutions operating by the state of Oregon are exempt from these. Stakeholders, therefore, for this part of the Office of Degree Authorization's activities are all those in-state private sector institutions as well as all out-of-state institutions offering degrees in Oregon. It's subject to the regulations of the office, and all and the other stakeholders are all Oregon consumers likely to use these institutions. Secondary stakeholders are employers and professional licensing agencies throughout Oregon who occasionally utilize the office to verify the authenticity of academic degrees claimed by employees or job applicants or those seeking licenses for various purposes in Oregon. That's the first job of the office. The other job is program review. The office is also responsible for enforcing a long-established Oregon statute that seeks to avoid creation of publicly financed programs or sites that are unnecessarily duplicative of existing public or private programs, or that would cause significant adverse impacts on other public or private institutions. Elaborate OARs, mediation procedures, are in place for the office's resolution of such potential conflicts. But the ultimate decision rests with the office and its managing agency, currently the Scholarship Commission. None of us can remember when this process has ever gone all the way to a commission-level hearing and decision because of these elaborate mediation procedures. The stakeholders in this program review area of the office are all post-secondary institutions in the state. Private sector stakeholders are obviously anxious to preserve this protection, and public sector stakeholders are anxious to repeal it, even though they too could find it useful on occasion. The issue addressed in the -1 amendments is where to house these important Office of Degree Authorization functions. Ever since the demise of the Oregon Education Coordinating Commission in 1989, the Office of Degree Authorization has been an orphan. In 89, it became the responsibility of the Governor's Office of Educational Policy and Planning, which went through some statutory reconfigurations over the years relating to workforce development before it was finally disassembled in 1997 by the legislature, and the Office of Degree Authorization, this orphan, was handed over to the Scholarship Commission. Throughout these various incarnations of the Office of Degree Authorization during the past decade, those of us in the private higher education sectors have attempted to preserve its functions as much intact and effective as possible. With each legislative session, the question would come up about where to cite the regulatory functions of this office. While we kept hoping for a post-secondary education coordinating commission, like many other states have, in which this kind of a function could reside, the reality was that our options remained limited to existing organizations. And every session we asked, should it stay in the governor's office? Should it be in the Department of Education? Should it be in the Board of Education? The Attorney General's Office, the Scholarship Commission, the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, even the state police was considered. When the governor indicated before the last 1997 session that he intended to move this regulatory activity out of his post-secondary policy area and that his desire was to move it to the Scholarship Commission, we all swallowed hard. Scholarship Commission was clearly uncomfortable and unhappy about being saddled with this responsibility, and they said so on numerous occasions. The private sector stakeholders were clearly nervous about the potential conflict of attaching an institutional regulation function to a student aid agency. But the governor is the governor. And we're all vowed to be good soldiers and try our best to make this square peg fit in a round hole. Through your committee last session, Mr. Chairman, we testified in favor of moving the office to the Scholarship Commission, albeit with written assurance in hand from the governor that the office remain important, would have unimpeded access to the impartial commission itself, would not leave Salem without his approval, and would be reviewed for a more appropriate salary classification range commensurate with the requisite qualifications of its administrator. During these past 2 years, suffice it to say that the square pegs never did fit in the round hole. In particular, the regulatory culture and demeanor of the Office of Degree Authorization did not mesh at all with the service culture and demeanor of the Scholarship Commission. The result was the ultimate dismissal of the Office of Degree Authorization Administrator and the subsequent search for a satisfactory replacement. The first search ended with no qualified candidate. Another search is now underway. In the meantime, the Commission's new director, Mr. Farber, has assumed management of the Office of Degree Authorization and has expended considerable time and effort in cleaning up a backlog of routine degree authorizations. Private sector stakeholders have been impressed with Mr. Farber's efforts and have been hopeful that, with his help, and once a new Office of Degree Authorization Administrator was found, there could be a renewed effort to make the office function effectively inside the Scholarship Commission. I want to emphasize the next sentence. We have no plans to upset this wobbly ODA apple cart in any way during this current legislative session, none whatsoever. But then, about 3 weeks ago, Mr. Farber announced his plans to resign from the commission for a new job in New Mexico, effective in mid-July. This announcement precipitated a chain of events that may have become more a part of today's hearing than the actual merits of the Dash 1 amendments before you. With the prospect of no ODA administrator, no degree authorizing administrator in place, and no commission director to shepherd these functions, private sector stakeholders felt compelled to revisit the question with a more appropriate and less contentious home for this office. Knowing that some of the recent work of this office had been subcontracted to the Department of Education staff experienced with post-secondary program review, because of their department responsibilities with private career school licensure, I approached that staff to ask whether there would be any points to explore bringing these two post-secondary review functions together, as is done in many other states, and whether this might be accomplished in the more regulatory environment of the Department of Education. Upon consideration if there seemed to be merit to this notion, I sought some signal from Superintendent Bunn that he would be willing to entertain such an idea before we proceeded with legislation in that direction. It was all 2 weeks ago. In the meantime, anticipating that we might want to pursue legislation, I asked Jan McComb, your committee administrator, to find a bill with an appropriate relating clause that we could use for such legislation if we proceeded. The only bill available was this bill. I indicated we weren't sure we were going to proceed until there was some sort of okay from the superintendent, but that we would appreciate the bill being held in committee for a week or so while we sought that okay, and while we considered the language of the yet-to-be-drafted amendment moving this office to the department. Unfortunately, this bill was heard last week on Monday, and I did not yet know whether the superintendent would be willing to entertain a proposal to move the office to his department. It did not seem appropriate to discuss such a move, at least until we knew whether the department would entertain the idea. In short, I didn't want to rattle anybody's cages last Monday if it wasn't necessary. All I told the commission testifiers that day was that there was a possible amendment being considered that in no way would jeopardize the bill's name change of the commission, and that if pursued would probably be received by the commission with great relief. The next day, last week on Tuesday, I got the okay from the superintendent to go forward. I immediately requested that the legislative council draft an amendment in consultation with department staff, and I immediately called Mr. Farber to inform him of our plans to prepare an amendment to move the ODA and bring it to your committee for consideration. He was out of state until Thursday, so I immediately called Commissioner Mizero to communicate our plans. To my surprise and my deep disappointment, his response was one of alarm and opposition. His reaction was evidently shared by Mr. Farber upon his return to Oregon on Thursday of last week and seems to have continued since, even as we have all waited until this morning for our first look at the fine print of the actual amendment. I've done my best to get it into all stakeholders' hands during the past few hours. In summary, I am deeply sorry for the foreshortened time frame and sense of surprise around the events of the last 3 weeks, and for any part I have played in causing this. Those of us who spend our entire day in the State House know how vital it is to maintain useful trust and to honor an open and deliberative process. The timing of Mr. Farber's announcement about his imminent departure, coupled with the deadline having passed for introducing new bills, and coupled with the time needed to explore the appropriateness of the Department of Education as a home for the Office of Degree Authorization, all resulted in a process indeed uncomfortable to me, and I'm sure to all of us. As Mr. Mizero characterized it when I first briefed him last Tuesday, I needed to be assured that there was a landing field before firing a public flight plan. I hope now we can set aside the process that led to the creation of this -1 amendment and concentrate on the merits of moving the office to the Department of Education. I continue to believe this would be a great relief of inappropriate and distracting responsibility from the Scholarship Commission, a more natural and neutral regulatory environment for the ODA office reauthorization to function in, and a welcomed opportunity to consolidate all of Oregon's post-secondary review functions into a single agency. If this move is made, the Scholarship Commission deserves our genuine gratitude for its sincere commitment of extraordinary time, energy, and emotion toward working with this office the last 2 years. Were I a commissioner, I would be ecstatic at the prospect of closing this tortured chapter and getting back to a focus on assisting students. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. We'll reserve our comments from the other two gentlemen.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Cafori. I'm representing two clients who have identical interests in this issue. One is the University of Phoenix, and the other is Oregon Career College Association. I have not been part of the scene for a long time. Came upon the scene relatively recently. I've been around as long as these two gentlemen have, but I can tell you that the Office of Reauthorization is really important to my two clients and support of the state of Oregon. There's a vital consumer protection role here, and that is to assure that students who pay their hard-earned money to get an education are going to find that they're going to a school that carries through with its advertisements and that carries through with its promises and that offers a high-quality education to those students. It's also important to us as schools. The credibility of our institutions is based on the strength of this office. The University of Phoenix, as you may know, has schools in about 14 states, and I've heard them say over and over again that the state of Oregon has as thorough and as strict and as competent a program review as any state in the country. And what that does for us in the marketplace is be able to say if we can make it here in Portland, make it here in Oregon, that we have stood up to some very strict qualifications. And we can say that to our students and we can say that to the public, and it's an important thing for us to do. The other thing we require from the ODA is a quick, thorough review of new programs. With modern technology and the increasing demand for trained people, both our career college and the University of Phoenix are expanding their curriculums and expanding the programs they offer. They're in a very competitive marketplace, and there's demand for employers and employees alike to get these programs going quickly. It's vital that we get a fast turnaround, a thorough check, but a fast turnaround from the Office of Reauthorization so that we can continue offering these programs to students and the students can get these programs when they need them. We've had at least a year of severe problems, and don't want to do any finger pointing. It's been a lot of people's situations that caused this. I think that the Scholarship Commission has, in good faith, and Mr. Farber worked very diligently and very hard to straighten out the problems and to get us back on track. We have been working with Mr. Farber, spending his time between Salem and Eugene, trying to piecemeal get the operation going while they found a new ODA director. They put out an application form that didn't get the quality of candidates they needed, so we still don't have a person. And then we just heard that Mr. Farber is leaving, and it really got us into a situation where we said, how much longer can we stand this chaos? We really need to get the office into a place where we know there's going to be some stability and some predictability in the future. And I don't want to take anything away from the Scholarship Commission or Mr. Farber. I think they've worked very hard. They certainly had their best of intentions. Well, I think it's just not a good mix, and we're in a rough situation.
Any questions? Oh, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ray Gauthier. I'm here as the president of one of the regulated institutions by the OVA and also as the president of the Oregon Career College Association. Gary Ann Dean's testimony gave an excellent historical overview of what brought us here on very short notice. I certainly will not repeat it. I would like to bring to your attention that I'm one of the few remaining participants in this saga from the very beginning. I'm one of the stakeholder representatives that received written assurances from the governor that the ODA was important, that it would remain as a distinct identity, that it would have unimpeded access to an impartial commission, and that the administrator's position would be reclassified. I'm also one of the individuals who initiated contact with the commission to facilitate a smooth transition, who helped draft the current OARs, which regulate the ODA, and I'm a member of the selection committee for the new ODA administrator. I have experience, both prior and subsequent, to scholarship commission supervision of the ODA as president of a regulated institution and one whose rights are protected by it. Prior to the transfer to the scholarship commission, the function of degree authorization had a 15-year history of stability in regulating all segments of post-secondary education, and Oregon had a national reputation as a leader and innovator in maintaining degree integrity. The current state of the ODA and its supervision is unsatisfactory. This is evidenced by the termination of the former ODA administrator without a plan as to how these functions would be performed, and the feeble efforts made to date to secure a qualified permanent replacement. We have been without leadership in this office for 6 months. This office, which the governor guaranteed to the stakeholders in writing would be preserved and protected, has been reduced to almost non-existence. Now, with the major focus of the Scholarship Commission shifted to the replacement of its executive director, I see nothing but continued obstacles to its rebuilding. I support this amendment in the belief that the Department of Education is in a far better position to resolve the short-term leadership problems being experienced and to provide the long-term regulatory oversight to enforce the law and protect the integrity of the degree authorization process. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, what I would like to do is, we are in the hearing section. I would like to close the hearing, and then we'll get to a work session to consider amendments. But before we do that, as a courtesy to Representative Kirstie, I would like to hold a hearing on the House Bill 3186.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Also, before we do that, is there anyone from the Department of Education prepared to speak to the amendments, or at least to tell us if there's receptivity in the Department of Education to this proposal?
No one for the department has signed up. I see some people from the department. Anita, are you prepared to testify on the amendments to 2249? Is there anyone here from, how about the Department of Higher Education?
Or any of the other stakeholders?
Yeah, right. Okay. And we'll hear from you before we go into the work session.
Mr. Chair, I can hear and I can talk very actively about the department. We've been talking with the department. They're not the top first person, but...
Yeah, that's what I'm interested in, hearing from the department.
What our conversations have been with
the department. No, we need somebody from the department, please. Thanks. So I'll do what I said I was going to do and close the hearing on 2249, open the hearing on 3186. Representative Kirstie, please bring up anyone to the table with you, if you'd like to. Joyce Cohen, I decline, she's signed up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kitty Piercy. I'm representative from House District 39, and the original bill, the one that passed through the House, is my little bill that simply would say that the Department of Education will inform local school districts and citizens of the options available for alternative schools in their communities. I sat through watched your hearings on this subject earlier this session, and after watching the hearing and realizing that there were a number of people who didn't, both citizens and school boards, who didn't seem to know what options they had under current law, I thought it was important to ask the Department of Education about taking on making that information more readily available so that people could choose those options if they wanted to. So that was the impetus of this bill, and it passed through the House, and now it's come to you. Now I have been approached by the Department of Education about adding additional language to the bill about child development specialists. And my understanding is that currently child development specialists act as guidance counselors and social workers in our elementary schools. By statute, they are only allowed to work in our elementary schools. I understand there's going to be an amendment proposed today that would allow the child development specialists to work in our middle and high schools by deleting the word elementary from the statute, right? You all will explain it much. I just wanted to sort of weigh in on how I am viewing this from existing attitudes, the bill that I brought over. My first reaction to this is a concern that some school districts might replace high school guidance counselors who are licensed by the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission and are required to have a master's degree or higher with child development specialists who are not licensed by TSBC and are only required to have a bachelor's degree or equivalent. So it's my opinion that you all ought to consider whether TSBC and the Department of Education to get together and address the scope of practice appropriateness and the education of the role of the child development specialist in secondary schools before moving forward with this. After expressing it, that these are my concerns and hope that you will be very thoughtful about that, it's my understanding the Department of Education will propose a two-year sunset so we can check back and make sure that school districts are not replacing our valuable counselors with less qualified or differently qualified people as a cost-cutting means if that's not appropriate. So wanted to tell you that I'm open to the idea, but I have had those concerns about scope of practice and that we ought to really be thoughtful in making this change.
Thank you. Questions or comments from the members, the representatives? Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome. For the record, I'm Joyce Cohen. I'm here today to support amendments and certainly do not have any objections to what Representative Percy talked about in terms of a two-year time when you really take a look at what's happening out there. And I would offer to say, though, that the statute's been in place for a number of years, and the Oregon Department of Education has been managing that through their rulemaking on 329-275, and we haven't heard any problems in that arena, either by the school districts or the Department of Education. So I wouldn't anticipate that you're going to get the districts there. The districts would still have to come forward and support the individuals, and the Oregon Department of Education would still have to approve their criteria, their standards of credentialing, if you will. So I would just urge, in these days of crisis and violence, we need to have as many mental health workers who are professionals who can assist our teachers and our families and in different kinds of roles to deal with the whole questions of dropouts and the high degree of dropout levels and the students in the secondary school being able to meet the students in the TAMS. You'll hear from people today. I'm going to stop because you've got critical people and the Department of Education who can lend more real information than what I can provide. I just urge you to pay some attention to this and allow the same kind of flexibility for the public schools and the districts that really want to begin to form flexible opportunities to deal with the whole question of dropout and violence and opportunity to make it work. So with that, I'm going to give up my seat. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, George, and I take the opportunity to get on the public record. Thank you for all the work that you did here as a legislator, and it's great to see you back. Hey, gentlemen.
Senator Hartung, committee. I have a question. I have a couple of handouts that I want to give to you, so should I?
If the clerk come and get them, you can go ahead with your motion. Welcome to the committee. Identify yourself.
Yeah, for the record, my name is John Deal, and I'm here to urge you to support House Bill 3186 and its amendments. I'm here to represent Beaverton School District, and we feel that the expansion of the child development specialist position from elementary to secondary will enable our district to retain and hire both the most competent and qualified staff to meet the needs of the students and families in our district. And I guess I want to emphasize that it's going to allow us not only to hire, but to retain the existing staff that we have in the Beaverton School District. And I provided a letter to you that kind of outlines our rationale for encouraging your support. And I'm really here to address any questions you may have that pertain to these amendments. So I'd like to do that, but I'd also like to add one additional comment, and that is to echo Senator Cohen's statement. This is a program that has been in place for quite some time. Its efficacy is well documented. In the Beaverton District, the people who are brought into these positions are people who have master's degree or better, and our goal at this point is, again, to expand the service that we found to be a very competent service to meet some of the specialized needs that we find in the high school. And we have a couple individuals right now who are working within our high school system who, without these kind of changes, would be enjoined from any further employment without going back and getting what would be essentially a redundant degree because of the qualification and degree that they have now certainly puts them in a good place to meet the needs of the students that they work with. And with that said, I guess I'd like to know if there are any questions before I turn this over to my colleague. To
hear from Dick, and then we'll
okay.
Ask you some
all right.
Questions.
That sounds good.
Welcome to the committee. Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dick Stokes. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I'm currently serving the second of 2 years as a counselor at Sunset High School in Beaverton. I have a certification from TSPC that runs out in November. I work with a small program at Sunset High School that is a team of staff within the mainstream that works with underachieving students that have predicted troubles with SIM, are likely to drop out, have difficulties with behavior in terms of being able to maintain themselves in the high school environment. The purpose of the Bridge program is to ensure that these underachievers or discouraged learners gain the study skills, academic skills, and behavioral skills to be successful at Sunset and graduate. The building's goal is that they earn all of their credits as freshmen and sophomore and then transition to the main team as juniors and seniors and graduate. I also have submitted a brief letter to Senator Hartung and you all on the committee identifying that in the first 3 semesters of the first year and a half of the program, the student's grade point average has gone from a 1.9 up to a 2.6 in 3 semesters. That puts them just about in the middle of their class on average with their peers as freshmen and sophomores at Sunset High School. And that's a great increase. They have also passed their SIM requirements. They have learned social skills. I have provided family facilitation with themselves, their parents, grandparents, guardians. And I've also been able to provide unique linkage with other agencies in the community that can provide support for these students and families. My role at the high school does not take the place of a traditional guidance counselor. I work along with them. I consider myself additive to the department and their efforts. Collectively, the 4 counselors in the department would not have the time to address the needs of these students in the Bridge program were they to have to deal with those students on their caseload.
Thank you. Questions for either Newman?
Mr. Chair, I do have a question.
Yes, Senator Castillo.
I don't know if you guys can answer this question or not, but thank you for your testimony, by the way. What is the difference in terms of level of training between the child development specialists and the guidance counselors for the schools? What is the, in terms of your educational school experience training, what is the difference there?
Well, let me answer that. As a matter of practice, in Beaverton, the level of training is substantially the same in terms of degree requirements. people in the child development specialist role have master's degrees. Some have master's degrees in counseling. Some have master's degrees in education with a counseling emphasis. There's a couple of individuals who have master's degrees in social work who have worked in, you know, juvenile correction settings, mental health institutions, have done internships in the school. In fact, in Beaverton right now, we have an internship program where we bring master's level social work interns into the school to provide a great deal of training. And with them, of course, that provides for the schools a pool of potential applicants when we're ready to look at expanding programs or filling positions that empty through attrition.
If I could, Mr. Chair. And so how does that compare with the high school guidance counselors?
Well, right now, the two people that we have in the positions in question have the equivalent training academically and what I would consider to be more training in terms of their qualifications for licensure. Those people are licensed clinical social workers, and they're required to have 20 hours of continuing education a year, which is in excess of what TSBC requires currently. And both individuals have worked extensively both in school settings and in community mental health environments.
Mr. Chair, it's for the TSC. So are we going to hear from the TSC?
Yes, they would like to explain what they want next. Anita, welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Hartung and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Anita McClanahan, Director of Early Childhood Programs for the Department of Ed, and I'm here today to testify for the Department of Education in support of the proposed amendment to House Bill 3168. The department views these amendments as an opportunity for school districts to expand their capacity to serve students at every level. And I think you've heard already how extensively we are using child development specialists and the benefits that they're bringing, at least in the Beaverton district. This will help districts and their school boards and school sites hire highly effective and highly qualified personnel to assist students and families in the early identification of potential learning or developmental problems, as well as identifying the unique individual strengths upon which a positive learning environment and learning experience can be built for the student. I'm going to give you some information that may be helpful regarding the requirements for the child development specialist and the program as we administer it at the Department of Education. Persons may serve as a child development specialist if they hold an appropriate personnel services license from TSPC, and I know that David Mighton will talk more about that, or they may be authorized by the Department of Education as a child development specialist. The department application criteria is what I've given you in the handout, and it requires a district plan. It requires appropriate professional training of the person being considered for the position, and it's up to the district school board and district decision makers to select the personnel for these positions. A master's degree is recommended, and training or experience in core competencies are required. And in the handout that I gave you, at the back of that, you'll see a page that says Child Development Specialist Competency Evaluation. It's towards the very back of your handout. And those are the competencies to which I'm referring that are required for anyone that's not a licensed counselor specifically to be qualified as a child development specialist. The child development specialist facilitates counselor-like activities, and I'll give you some examples of those. They assess students individually in their growth personally and developmentally. They provide consultative services for parents. They link with community resources for utilization and planning to meet with individual students and their needs and families and their needs. They work with individual students and small groups of students in developing positive attitudes about themselves and about their relationships with others. They play a significant role in helping identify where students are falling down and assisting teachers with strategies in order to meet the individual needs of the children in their caseload. The OARs and the matrix for the Child Development Specialist Program Implementation Plan spells out more fully what those requirements are. And in the handout that I gave you, we do have the OARs, they're the yellow sheets. And then the matrix for the implementation plan is also included. And it's very comprehensive what a district must supply us with at the Department of Ed before they are approved to be have a child development specialist program in their school. They are also required to send the Department of Ed an annual written evaluation report based on the goals stated in their plan and what they hope to achieve through this program. I think you'll find these statistics very informing and also helpful in you making your decisions. Currently in Oregon, we have 269 child development specialists working throughout 50 districts. The department has authorized 88% of these, meaning that we have approved these folks as child development specialists. 12% have been certified by TSPC. That's our current statistics. Of the 226 child development specialists authorized by the Department of Ed, you will be pleased to know that 63% hold master's degrees, 4% have PhDs, and 21% have bachelor's degrees. However, they have met the criteria in the core competencies, meaning that they have work experiences or other kinds of training that would qualify them to do this type of work. The folks that are being licensed through TSPC also have master's degrees because they mainly will be licensed counselors. So I think that lets us inform our decision-making around the fact that the majority of folks working in this arena are competent and do hold a master's degree. We believe that the proposed amendments will be an asset to school districts as they continue to find ways to meet the diverse needs of their students. And I know you've heard multiple times what those needs are and how diverse those needs actually are in terms of anti-violence, in terms of students meeting the high academic standards that we have set as a state, and in terms of all of our concerns that we really do meet the needs of every child and every student within our state. So I would be also happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from the members? Thank you. David Mighton, please. David, welcome. Proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Hartung and members of the committee. I'm David Mighton, Executive Director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. And being handed to you is a brief piece of testimony that calls your attention to the differences between what child development specialists are to do by statute and what school counselors do. The child development specialists, as set forth in the statute, are primarily provide preventive services. And their role is to be essentially liaisons between the home and school for pre-kindergarten and primary grade students. In that role, they're to work with parents, schools, and other community agencies according to that statute. School counselors, on the other hand, have a more focused role in regard to assisting students in development and developing decision-making skills in terms of planning academic programs, in terms of setting tentative career goals, and in terms of increased responsibility for their own actions and in their interpersonal relationships with others within the school community. School counselors do, of course, use other school and community resources, but the kind of community resources that are drawn on in the upper grades are different than those for the preschool children, as you might understand. Therefore, we believe that the schools need school counselors who have the skills and competencies that are described here, and that those are different from those required for child development specialists. And we believe that just removing elementary from the statute on child development specialists is a more significant move than it might appear, and that it would open up the opportunity for districts to hire child development specialists who didn't necessarily have those advanced competencies.
Thank you, David. Questions?
Mr.
Chair. Senator Durbin.
I have a question, Dave. If we did have that sunset clause and made it well known that if we see that this is going to be an end run, circumvent the counselor requirement, would that ease your concern?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, it certainly would give us better information we have at present. But I can tell you that after the bill passed in the late 70s, it created the child development specialist. Some districts, including Portland, renamed all of their elementary counselors child development specialists. And people called child development specialists are doing counseling tasks at the elementary level.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I guess I'm well aware of that because it was a little bit earlier in the 70s when that came in. And this was Sam Johnson's favor. I mean, I guess he was on the Ways and Means Committee, and this was Sam's pride and joy, this was Child Development Specialist Program. And no doubt there was the movement to use this as elementary counselor, which at that time, folks, was a good thing because we really didn't have many elementary counselors, so it was a positive thing in the long run. But I would share the same concern if this were to replace. The counselor has a different kind of a role, and I see the child development in a deep term at the secondary level. It's bothering me a little bit. You know, I can try to visualize the sign on the door, child development specialist, and juniors and seniors are going in to see the first month. So the title may need to be worked on someplace down the line. But I'm thinking that for a pilot project, the department's watching it very closely, and if everybody knows that the solids will get, this committee will be pretty much intact, at least with the dog. Next time, remember, if there's a view for that, then I would really want to change it. But I think I could go with it with that concept. The strong message that don't try to use this to keep what, and I respect what Beaverton's doing. I'm not sure that's historically been the case with all child development specialists. There are a lot of ways you can get around that. So district by district, it would vary. But if the department recognized it, it would be a strong monitoring of why it could be supported. That's why I was curious how Dave thought about that.
Are you asking for an answer?
I think I got it.
Okay. I think you did. Right. Any other questions or comments from the members?
Mr. Chair,
I
guess, you know, seeing this bill and the amendment and in other committees seeing these last-minute amendments to things that don't really relate to what the original, they haven't had to match the relating clause, but having things tagged on now, we're at that stage of the discussion where this is going to start happening, where we get one bill that we very much support and then comes along an amendment that we sort of feel a little lukewarm about and have some concerns about. And you know, I very much want to explore all the different ways that we can help our kids in all of our schools, K-12. So I understand why this amendment comes before us, but I do share concerns about the qualifications and how those are different from the high school counselors, and that, you know, we all know that we don't have enough counselors in our schools today and that we have a very, very serious problem with that. And I do get concerned that this may be seen as a temporary, I think it's a way of helping to fill some of the void that is there, but I just hope that it doesn't get sidetrack our focus on that we do need to have more counselors in our high schools. They are very much needed. And so I have very mixed feelings about this amendment. The main bill I very much support, so a little torn on how I'm going to vote on this. I think I'm going to probably support it. It does have the sunset, and I guess that's the part that
assures me we will take a look at this and see how, you know, how it is working, but I do have some concerns about this.
Thank you. Other questions for David?
I have certainly more opportunities, but I gave you another sheet that shows the licenses of accomplishments that are issued, and on that it shows the districts that were awarded those licenses during this current school year, about 300 of them, and roughly 30 of those were for school counseling, and those were for specialists, including Mr. Stokes, who spoke to you earlier. Normally, those are issued for specialists like drug and alcohol counselors or student intervention specialists or behavior management persons. So there are vehicles to create these special license folks without opening up the entire secondary school counseling staff to filling child development specialists.
That's very helpful information, and that changes my mind on how I would vote on this. Thank you.
Okay, other comments or questions? Anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 3186? Greg McMurdo, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, for your record, Greg McMurdo from the Department of Education. I'm sorry I couldn't be here earlier. One of the unfortunate things this session is that the House and the Senate meet at the same time, the Education Committee. So I didn't hear all of the testimony. I think I did hear enough to tell that there's some interest in a sunset clause for this concept, and I think that's probably a good thing to do because I sense some discomfort on the part of some of the members. The -2 amendments that you have do provide a sunset clause of 1-1-2002. I think it would be very appropriate for this committee or the interim committee that will be meeting, I assume it will be similar to this committee, to call upon the department and TSPC during the interim period and even before the next session to see how things are going and get a progress report from us.
Thank you. Great questions, comments? Anyone else wish to testify? Yes.
Thank you very much, Chair Hartung and the rest of the committee. My name is Julia Cohen, so for the record, and I am a child development specialist in the Beaverton School District. I was originally had a license of accomplishment through TSPC before I came to realize that I could be come under the auspices of the Oregon Department of Education CDS program, because I do not have a certificate in school counseling. What I just quickly wanted to respond to was Senator Castillo's query to the director of TSPC regarding and the comments that were made about some flexibility. I know that the reason we've gotten to this point is that many of us have tried very hard to see any other options we could find to continue, in Dick's case, to continue employment. His license of accomplishment expires in November. He's required by TSPC to go through the certification, the school counseling certification master's degree program in order to maintain his license or his certificate through TSPC. And we found that TSPC has, we're not clear about the flexibility that sort of was implied, that there are ways to get around the certification issues. It's our understanding. Every single person in the Beaverton District with whom we've gathered together who has the same issue, faced with the same issue, tried desperately to work with TSPC and or anybody who could help us find ways to mix and match and do anything we could to get certification. And we found that, in fact, that flexibility isn't there. And a number of folks are currently exploring the possibility of going back to school, et cetera, in order to meet those certification requirements to continue their license of accomplishment. So I would be very interested in hearing ways around it or ways that the way to recognize the skills and the ability to employ people through TSPC, some of the concerns that we were not able to get anywhere with that. So I felt like I really wanted to clarify for you. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Other questions, Anna? Thank you very much. Anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 3186? Not, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3186. Someone want to move the amendment? I'll move it. Senator Courtney moves the -1 amendment to House Bill.
That's true.
The -2. We have two amendments.
The -2 amendments have
the sunset clause, which would have them come back in 2 years and review what's in the dash ones. Right. Do you not?
Oh, so the dash two has the dash one in there?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Member Courtney moves the dash two amendments. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
I move House Bill 3186 as amended for due presentation.
Senator Courtney moves House Bill 3186 as amended by dash two amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? The clerk will call the roll. Excuse me just a second. Senator Duncan, you know what we're voting on?
I'm going to go ahead and vote for this out of committee, and I'm going to vote on the floor. I want a chance to talk to the chief sponsor of the bill and see how she's feeling about this.
Okay. Yeah. Clerk, we'll call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion is passed. Carrier?
Okay.
Senator Courtney will carry 3186. Now I would like to reopen a work session on... work session on House Bill 3585, and as out of consideration to the Vice Chairman, why she would like us to reconsider the vote by which we tabled House Bill 3585. Is that correct?
That's right, and if we could, I think Lori Wimmer wanted to testify. I don't know whether she left or not. I guess she did.
Well?
Should we wait till she...
We'll close that and we'll go back to the one that I interrupted before. Close that and we will reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2249. And let's see, where were we on that? 2249. Matt and Karen, please. And Tamara, please. And Danny Santos. Please identify yourself and proceed. We are in the hearing on 2249. Let's see. And we have not adopted the
Tamara Hartung, members of the committee. For the record, Danny Santos for the Governor's Office of Education and Workforce Policy. What I'd like to come forward today with is basically some background and some comments about the proposed amendments that have been submitted. I think what you've heard prior to this is some of the concerns and expressed by a number of parties, primarily I think the concerns expressed by the independent colleges, the proprietary schools, and the for-profit institutions. And I think, again, what I'd like to express is that the governor has and shares a lot of those concerns with those individuals as well as the other stakeholders. And it's continuing to work with all the stakeholders in trying to make this Office of Reauthorization a viable and critically important function, and that it continues to be so, and it remains on the radar of the governor and, again, I think all the other stakeholders. I think this afternoon you'll hear from other people, the other stakeholders in this relationship, who will express their concerns about the amendments. What I'd like to do is just, again, take a step back and then talk about the current amendments. As was described earlier, the bill that came before the session last session was Bill Senate Bill 917. At that time, we worked out with all the parties an effort to make this a workable agreement, and as was expressed, the stakeholders signed off on this to move it to the State Scholarship Commission with the hopes of making it a working relationship there. Since that time, I think it's fairly fair to say that a whole lot of the stakeholders have gotten together about the administrative rules, process, the hiring process, and one of the things I want to point out is that currently there is a vacancy in the administrative position for the Office of Reauthorization. As we tried to fill that vacancy with an acting person, we wanted to encourage all parties that they'd be brought to the table in considering filling that position, and also I think as was expressed that a vacancy continues to exist. One of the reasons it continues to exist is that there was concerns expressed about the candidates that were being brought forward, including some of those from independent proprietary schools and from for-profit. So again, the process is in place. I think we're trying to bring, make sure that everybody is at the table to express their concerns. I think one of the other things, too, I'd like to express is there's really been one of the things that was brought up is that the departure of the Deputy Director of the Oregon State Scholarship Commission, Woody Farber, is one of the reasons that this is being brought up at this time. I want to take that that note to really express the Governor's Office of Appreciation for all the stakeholders, and in particular, Mr. Farber, for trying to make this work, trying to get this to be a working effort, a cooperative effort, and collaboration among all the parties. And I also want to congratulate the Scholarship Commission for its work to this day. It remains on their radar. It remains a critical issue. And again, I just want to leave prior to the testimony by the other two members up here that this remains a high priority, a high importance to the Governor's Office as well. And I think the situation as it currently exists is something that we find is a workable one. So with that, I think these other people will probably express their comments on the amendments as well. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just so that I'm clear, Mr. Santos, are you saying that the governor supports retaining the ODA with the OSSC?
Chair Hartung, Senator Gordley, I think it would be a great concern to the governor's office that we make a chance at this time for the reasons that are being expressed at this stage. I think, again, if you've heard the concerns before, I think those are legitimate that we have to work with. But I think as you hear some of these other concerns, that we would be... I guess we'd be concerned about a transfer at this stage.
All right. Thank you very much.
You go on, if you can. Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, for the record, Brad and Sharon, representing the Oregon University system. As Mr. Santos said, the stakeholders have been involved in this process for many years. I was intimately involved, along with Vice Chancellor Shirley Clark, Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, in the development of Senate Bill 917 and the resolution of the citing of the Office of Degree Authorization. We found it to be a settled matter at that time, and we all pitched in to make it work, and as you've heard from the Commission. It has been a long and difficult process, but one which has now been frankly, about 95 or 97% of the work is now behind us, and we can look in the rear mirror and see that all of the heavy lifting has been accomplished. Along with the representatives of the private college and proprietary school, the State System of Higher Education has dedicated an extraordinary amount of time and staff time and the work of our general counsel in development of those administrative rules, the OARs governing this process, and all of the other activities that went through the process of the State Scholarship Commission's, shall we say, shakedown crews in trying to get this new responsibility under their belt, to master it, to learn all the processes, to learn all the players, and to get a process that would work. We are satisfied, Mr. Chairman, that the decision that was made 2 years ago by the governor and by this legislature in adopting Senate Bill 917 was the correct one, and think it is far too early to try and start over when we have just now reached the point of implementation of the administrative rules, of the commission itself feeling, I would say, a great sense of pride, and one pride they are certainly entitled to, in having mastered this responsibility, which was given to them, and I believe they're prepared to make it work. Now, as to the amendments, the Oregon University system is unalterably opposed to the placement of the Office of Degree Authorization in the Department of Education, as it has been each and every time it's been proposed, this round, the previous round, and other rounds, by virtue of the fact that the Department of Higher Education would find it to be an anomaly that disputes over degree authorization of the coming out of actions taken by or proposed by the Department of Higher Education would be cited in the Department of Education, where they would then be resolved by this matter by this office there, and disputes unresolved there would then be adjudicated by the superintendent of public instruction. I have full faith and the incumbent superintendent served with him as a member, know him, hold him in the highest regard, as I do many other previous superintendents, and would have the absolute confidence that they would be able to discharge that duty without any fear or of claim of favor or other conflict.
Mr. Chair, but I'm more specific.
Mr. Chairman,
you said other previous, not
what?
Sure.
Including present company, yes. Mr. Chairman, certainly including present company, would feel quite well walking out of the room and going home and not having to worry about the integrity of any decision that the previous superintendent made. But, Mr. Chairman, and members, consider that what is being proposed is to put the superintendent of public instruction in a superior position to the chancellor and the state board of higher education in matters of degree authorization disputes. We have settled the matter by having it placed with the state scholarship commission. We are satisfied with that. Let me say also, Mr. Chairman, and let me unburden myself here. We have worked in good faith. The State Department of Higher Education has, since the abolition by this legislature of the State Coordinating Commission, in the resolution of these disputes. The way the statute works is that public post-secondary institutions are restrained by the statute from extending those programs if there can be made a finding of significant adverse impact on any other vendor, any other institution, proprietary or private nonprofit. So the statute restrains the state system of extending its programs if they are in conflict with any other entity. Those other entities have free reign. They may go anywhere at any time and place their programs in any proximity to ours without any restraint on our part. We understand that, we understand the motivation behind that, and we accept it. But given the fact that we are acted upon by this statute, as our other public higher education institutions, we think it extraordinarily important that a neutral body, free of apparent or potential conflict of interest, be the repository for the Office of Degree Authorization. I would agree with Mr. Andino on one item, and we did agree in the last legislative session, that lacking a coordinating commission to resolve these matters, we would have to continue to make do. But I think we have made a good job of this, and we would be extremely disturbed. We have a bill which has cleared a House committee, passed by the House, come to the Senate in the last month, or close to the last month of this legislative session, brought to you as amendment without notice to the other stakeholders in this process, without notice to the State System of Higher Education, to me, until it was disclosed in front of this committee last week. I do not consider that to be good faith in trying to maintain the trust and confidence which these sectors must have if we are going to discharge the responsibilities we all have under the statute. I would hope the committee would leave these amendments behind, leave the reauthorization as a settled matter for now, compliment the commission, as they should be, for the good work in discharging the obligation we gave them 2 years ago in Senate Bill 19, and let us get on with the work. You may look again next year in the next session. But when you do, I would hope that it would be with full knowledge, with full disclosure, and with the cooperation and collaboration of all the sectors who are impacted by the statute, not just by one.
Thank you. Anna?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tamara Dykman, representing the Oregon Community College Association. I know that you're on a short time frame today, and I'll limit my comments basically, we share the same concerns as the university system. I basically agree with everything that Gretchen just expressed to you. This has happened much too quickly for us. We do not know what the impact would be to our programs to move this to the Department of Education. And we hope that you will not proceed with the amendment, but that we'll pass the bill out as it is right now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Questions, comments? Thank you very much. We have one other person signed up. Jessica, if you don't mind, you are signed up for the bill without the amendments. Is that correct? Oh, with the amendments. Okay. Do you want to come and tell us why with the amendments? All right. Hey, we're really on a tight time frame. I need you to be very calm. We can come back at 5:30.
Okay.
That's your better.
Senator Harkin, members of the committee, that's not necessary. My name is Jessica Harris. I'm here today representing myself as a member of the commission, not in any other role that I play here in the Capitol. So I want to put that on the record. I would like to say that I am in support of the Dash 1 Amendment as a member of the commission that came on the commission at the time Senate Bill 917 was passed last session. I can tell you that at the time I was appointed to the commission did not want the Office of Degree Authorization. The very first phone call I received, I was told that the commission is now stuck, quote-unquote, with this responsibility. We don't want it, but now we deal with it. In the last 2 years, that sentiment has played itself out, and now we are in a position where I honestly, now leaving the commission after 2 years, do not feel that the function itself will remain as well as it is was 2 years ago, given no current executive director will be there as of mid-July and no ODA administrators in place. I believe the Department of Education is a very safe place to put this function. It will be impartial. This commission should be able to relinquish that responsibility. They've done an excellent job. We work very, very hard, but I believe it ought to go to a place where it is less contentious. Thank you.
Good. It appears that there's a little instability right now within the commission, and we have heard a large organization that is pinnacle of stability. And I know if I were wanting to have a secure place, I knew I would have a uniform application of a standard and this sort of thing, I would want it over a bit. Do you agree with that?
Chair Hartung, Senator George, I do. I do agree.
Any other questions for Justin? Well, thank you, Justin. Anyone else wish to testify on the House Bill 2249?
Mr. Chair, there have been several references to the Department of Education, and I'd just like to hear something from the department about their role in this.
Greg McMurdo, please.
Mr. Chair, while he's coming,
yes,
I have a question. I wonder, has anyone, it's my understanding, unless it's changed, the California Department of Education does have a degree authorization. Is that, people know if that's still the case? Historically, it has been. I wondered if people have talked to anyone to see how that works. I have no knowledge of how it works. I've always known.
Okay, thank you. Greg, proceed.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, for your record, Greg McMurdo from the Department of Education. The department didn't take or does not take a position on this bill. If the legislature does transfer this office to it, I'm sure you that we'll do a good job of administering it.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Senator Goldley? Is that satisfied?
I'm sorry, I did not hear what Mr. McMurdo said.
Say it again.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, if the legislature does transfer the Office of Degree Authorization to the department, I can assure you that we will do a good job, but we don't have a position on the amendments to this bill.
Is that to say that the department is not actively lobbying to have this entity become a part of the department?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gordley, that's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Greg, is your reasoning that you don't want to look like you're trying to grab something?
Mr.
Sound like a very cynical statement, and I understand.
Senator Duncan, that's partially, and it's just this is also new, something new to us, but it's just not something we were seeking.
Mr. Chairman, will you?
Just a second, Molly.
Is your question answered?
Senator Duncan?
You're being very defensive, I understand.
Okay. I've been defensive before, so I
still are.
From time to time.
Or paranoid, one of those. Any other questions for Greg?
Thank you very much.
I said, yeah. Thank you, Greg. Anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 3249? Not. I'll close the public hearing before we move to the work session, which we'll do immediately. I would like to reopen the work session on House Bill 3585 and reconsider the vote by the tabled that measure. And I tell you why I want to reconsider it. The President of the Senate asked that this be sent to the Rules Committee, and as a courtesy to him, I would like to see that done. As you know, he asked that the subcommittee down at any time, but he would like to see this bill continually work, so he's still there to do it. Is there any discussion? Senator Courtney?
No. We've got education reform. We've got school discipline. We just finished up on charter school. A host of other bills. I just really regret when I realize that you got to make the call when you're president. This committee is being shut down because this committee has the expertise to deal with the third grade reading bill, the expertise to work these bills, because I don't think we're going home probably until maybe the end of June or sometime in late June. We can send things to rules, we understand why, but this is the committee itself from day one with one of the most controversial issues. It's demonstrated its expertise, it's demonstrated its knowledge, and I really am having trouble with referring bills down to rules, which are loaded with talent, they do their job, but jurisdictionally, experience-wise, this is the community, this is the heavyweight committee that should be dealing with these four or five issues, and yet today, we're going to dispose of them either by tabling them, which means they're gone, or they're going to rules, or a committee which really doesn't have the experience. So I just really, really regret that for what it's worth, and I wish you could prevail upon the President, maybe, to allow the committee, with its expertise, individually and collectively, to continue to deal with these things, up or down, or amendments, bring the party together, because this is heavyweight stuff, the four issues that I just mentioned, and I'm just...
Well, we can. We will. The President said we can reopen the committee next week if we can make the case. If the majority of you make the case, I'll go to the President on that basis.
The bill still has to rise or fall on its merits in this committee.
On the floor.
It's still got to rise or fall. The Rules Committee, I'm not on it. Maybe somebody here is. Maybe one of you is. And they've dealt with a lot of education issues, so I don't want to shortchange them and say that, you know. But you have to admit that this is not a lightweight committee that you've been chairing, Mr. Chair. At least if it is, I sure missed it, buddy. It's caused me to lose out of sleep this past several months. But for what it's worth, I've already voted to send this thing to rules because I want to keep it alive. But in a way, so be it. I just had to make that little, whatever it is, worth statement.
Well, I understand what you're saying. You also understand how important it is to work with the leadership.
You're doing your minority. It's important. I don't think you got much choice.
Mr. Chair, I chair the next committee that comes in at 3 o'clock.
Yes.
And Senator Lynn's absent, so I would offer that if we need to go over a little bit so we can continue this.
Would you all feel better about coming back at 5:30?
No. That's not what I'm saying.
No? Okay.
And three of us have a committee.
I'd like to finish my comments.
Right.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
First of all, I agree wholeheartedly with Senator Courtney's statement. I think we're at a point in the session where we really get to, we become even more dysfunctional than we have been at some earlier stages. We're moving too quickly. We're not processing these issues as thoughtfully and as deliberately as we need to. Case in point, bill we just heard. And that troubles me.
Okay. The majority of the committee want me to go to the President and ask that we have an opportunity to have a meeting on Monday.
That's Ryan. That's just what Peter
is. I'm asking for the majority. Anybody object to that?
Just bring any garbage in. Good stuff is fine.
As an option, and you may not want to wait until Wednesday, but you all had asked me to invite Hill Walker back with some representatives from the Northwest Regional Ed Lab, and Wednesday the 26th was the first day that they could all come together. So
How about a meeting on Wednesday?
I'd like Wednesday to come back even.
I would argue for Monday and Wednesday. Yeah. Phil Walker and the Northwest Educational Lab deserve 3 days, let alone 2 hours. So I don't want to.
Monday and Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay, everyone agreed? We will meet. I will ask the president, and I'm sure he'll agree that we meet Monday and Wednesday. Any other business?
Are we going to remove House Bill 3585 from the table?
No. It's still on the table, and when we meet Monday, we can take it off the table and work
the
bill. We'll work the bill.
Okay.
All these bills, all the bills that we've tabled will be there. Rishi, did we send anything to rules?
I believe we sent 557 rules.
It was just tabled.
Well, that's right, we can
table it. We table it. We can take that off the table too. Everything we can.
3013 was your rule.
And we will get, let's see, do you want to, we've got 2 minutes on 2249, or do you want to do that Monday?
Monday, please.
Anybody, a majority of you want to do it today or Monday?
Well, Monday's fine.
Okay.
But I wish Dan or somebody could check with California to see what happens.
We'll ask the Department of Education to check with them because they would know the right questions asked. How does it work for their department? Hey, thank you. Anything else to come before the...
I have one thing to say.
Certainly.
In 1 minute. We all received a letter from Vera Katz, the mayor of Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, she asked us to have courage stay the course with the school reform. I just wish that at some point we would require a record of success of it.
Okay, thank you. Anything else come before we are adjourned?
Yeah.